In the geopolitical thriller Debt of Honor, we witness a modern conflict that begins not with missiles, but with market manipulation. Japan, once America's economic miracle child, faces a fundamental crisis. Its economic foundation is crumbling. Despite technological prowess and industrial might, Japan remains vulnerable due to its dependence on imported resources and export markets. This vulnerability becomes personal for industrialist Raizo Imada, who witnessed his family's suicide during World War II rather than surrender to American forces on Saipan. At a clandestine bathhouse meeting, Japanese business leaders confront their collective disaster. Inflated real estate values used as collateral for loans are creating a house of cards. When America's trade policies further strain relations by blocking Japanese access to innovative manufacturing technologies, Yamada sees an opportunity. Unlike his colleagues who focus on immediate economic concerns, he envisions a radical solution. Japan must achieve true independence by securing its own resource base and breaking free from American influence permanently. What makes this scenario so chilling is its plausibility. The interdependence that was supposed to prevent conflict instead creates new vulnerabilities. When nations become economically entangled, the chess pieces of power shift in unexpected ways. Could economic warfare truly escalate to military conflict? History suggests it's not only possible, but has happened repeatedly. Economic strangulation often precedes physical confrontation. Jack Ryan craves normalcy after his CIA career and national security advisor role. While golfing with Admiral Jackson, a White House page interrupts his peaceful return to finance. "Your vacation from government service is over," President Durling declares. Despite Ryan's reluctance, global instability demands his expertise. Africa remains in turmoil. The administration has mishandled international situations, and naval movements suggest India might be using Tamil Tigers against Sri Lanka. When Secretary Hansen dismisses these concerns, Ryan counters, "Every carrier we have, except for two in overhaul, is either deployed or conducting workups. We have no strategic reserve worthy of the name." Ryan's return coincides with Operation Sandalwood, investigating Japanese recruitment of American officials. When Ryan inquires about industrialist Raizo Yamada, CIA Deputy Director Foley confirms he's under investigation. Ryan embodies the tension between personal desire and public duty, recognizing crucial battles often fall to those who'd rather be elsewhere. America's strength has always been built on systems of trust, financial markets operating on collective belief, military alliances based on mutual defense, and political institutions founded on shared values. Yet these systems have created vulnerabilities. At the Depository Trust Company, a routine software update introduces a weakness. Identical software across all six mainframes creates a single point of failure despite apparent redundancies. America's military has transformed since the Cold War. Rear Admiral Mancuso now commands just 19 attack submarines and 6 missile boats awaiting dismantlement, a fraction of the former Pacific Fleet. Without the Soviet threat, his boats merely track Chinese submarines or conduct research. The political system shows cracks, too. A psychologist discovers her patient was raped by the vice president, threatening public trust in government. Japanese industrialists recognize America's greatest strengths have become weaknesses. Targeted strikes against key nodes can cascade through entire networks. Our modern comfort depends on functioning systems, creating a paradox where connectivity brings both convenience and vulnerability. The Japanese plan unfolds with precision across multiple domains simultaneously, striking America at its most vulnerable points. In financial markets, Hong Kong banks initiate a massive sell-off of U.S. Treasury bonds, with other Asian institutions following suit. Nearly $600 billion floods the market, tanking the dollar and forcing the Fed to raise rates. On the NYSE, the Columbus Group Citibank sell order triggers automated systems to dump banking stocks. At sea, Japanese destroyers execute a precise battle turn between American carriers Enterprise and Stennis as Admiral Sato watches torpedoes launch. A female lookout spots them, but faces skepticism until CAG Sanchez investigates. Concurrently, Japanese forces seize American territories. On Saipan, Colonel Sasaki captures Governor Camacho, declaring, "This island now belongs to my country." Operation Kabul targets Guam, protected by just 50 USAF security police. This coordinated attack exploits America's post-Cold War complacency, vulnerable military positions, algorithm-dependent markets, and diverted political attention collapsing together. In a remote Japanese valley, 10 massive holes drilled into basaltic rock conceal Japan's hidden nuclear arsenal. At the Yoshinobu Space Complex, an engineer admires the beauty of evil as a supposed failed satellite launch actually tests a ballistic missile delivery system. A disguised Tokyo facility houses nuclear weapons production. The greatest challenge isn't the plutonium hemispheres, but crafting perfectly balanced uranium-238 re-entry vehicle bodies. Inverted cones weighing over 400 kilograms, essential for flight stability. Yamata and Prime Minister Goto celebrate their achievement. 10 operational SS-19 missiles funded through their space program, with plutonium from the Manju reactor complex. When revealed to President Durling, this nuclear dimension alters the strategic calculus, forcing American leaders to consider otherwise unthinkable options. This reality confirms technological knowledge cannot be unlearned. The barrier to nuclear capability isn't scientific understanding, but access to materials and delivery systems. Faced with Japan's multi-domain assault, Jack Ryan crafts a response leveraging American strengths against Japanese vulnerabilities when conventional military options are limited. The financial counterattack stems from an insight from Ryan's wife: if you don't write it down, it never happened. With DTC crashed and Friday's records gone, they could invalidate all transactions after Friday noon. Winston and Gant confirm most investors would welcome this do-over after their losses. Militarily, Ryan and Admiral Jackson develop Operation Zorro, precisely targeting leadership rather than civilians. When Hansen objects, calling it murder, Jackson counters that it's more humane than killing young soldiers. American forces implement a deception plan using television technology to show carriers still in dry dock. Jack assures Durling this will succeed because we're showing them what they expect to see. For Japan's nuclear threat, when defenses intercept bombs aimed at silos, B-2 bombers target a hydroelectric dam above the missile field, creating a flood that destroys the missiles. Ryan's approach targets systems and leadership rather than traditional battles, avoiding massive casualties. As the crisis resolves, both nations face profound questions about their relationship and future. The conflict has exposed vulnerabilities in supposedly robust systems and forced a reevaluation of America's global role. The crisis reveals the global financial system's fragility. What seemed an impregnable fortress proved vulnerable to coordinated attack. The near collapse demonstrates how interconnected economies create shared vulnerabilities. Militarily, America's overextended posture becomes evident. With damaged carriers and lost submarines, conventional options were limited. Admiral Jackson's comparison to 1944's Operation Forager highlights America's dramatically declined expeditionary capability. Nuclear weapons demonstrate their continued relevance despite decades of arms control. They remain both security guarantor and greatest threat, while Japan's secret program shows how proliferation makes prevention increasingly difficult. Jack Ryan recognizes the world has fundamentally changed. Post-Cold War optimism about a peace dividend has yielded to a reality where threats emerge unexpectedly. The debt of honor has been paid, but at tremendous cost to both nations.